price is trying to do a lot of small sort of cover over our procedures to handle any questions about that. My understanding is on the appellants and both the county and county side that the amicus attorney general wants to go first for 5 minutes, and then there will be one person arguing for appellant for Center for Medical Progress, one lawyer, and then for the National Abortion Federation, there will be one lawyer arguing. Is that fair? Can you tell us why you see it here? All right. And we've had a number of informants. We decided that we were going to set times. So amicus is allowed 5 minutes. That would be a separate clause, as I've indicated previously. Basically, oral argument is for the court to be able to have the questions answered, and we want to answer even though I know that the parties want to say what they think they're saying, but we will use the time as well as the court's time. And so if at any point we have additional questions that we're questioning you, if you're the party party decider, amicus, please, even though the clock may have run out, this is going to take into our questions. We will make sure that, for example, the 5 minutes, if the court has additional questions, I don't want the appellant to be concerned to be given to the community of Hawaii because the court has additional questions. We will work with the appellant lawyer there. So essentially, the open, if I can explain previous to people that are in the audience, we're always happy to have people to come and view the courts, and I truly are to receive your open, but this case is a little bit different in the sense that there's a sealed record involved. Even though there's a sealed record involved, there are errors in that that the parties want to address the court on, and we have found the information that has been available to the public at this particular time. So there will be an open court to decide that 20 minutes, 5 minutes for amicus, and then 15 minutes of the dead time will be remaining for the appellant's counsel. And that is also your 15 minutes.
Yes, I'm so sorry. It's just the individual case. In August, of course, I was looking out to the issue of the court and make their case much longer than it
was. Well, let me answer the second part of your question first, though, and that's exactly the question that the Supreme Court has prosecuted the SEC in New Jersey.
No, it does not, because the SEC, it was concerned that the party that did the grant part of the investigation might destroy the information. Here, they got the information, equated the information. It's not just one thing. They're not going to destroy the information. They're stating that they don't want to get over to you. So, I don't understand the SEC.
In these years, the president has appeared three different policies. That means only one, not that you're a third party. If this policy is number one, if no substance is right for a third party, it's not the subject of subpoena to have prior to this.
Really? If information is taken from the individual, which is their contention in this case, and the thief has the information, if the company subpoenas the information to the thief, it's the person's legal mistake and exposure to the information wrong.
And there is an order under United States v. Jacobson, the court recognizes one third party as the opinion, and it's presented from this court of law that if the negotiating of a state action is
subject to that, to my first question, which is this. So, if you're right, then when you go in front of a judge and the NAF opposes the subpoena, you'll win. So, what's your prejudice?
If that's the harm that you're fighting, if you think you're right,
then what you can tell me what your prejudice is. Tell me if you were to tell me how the Attorney General of Arizona is in the slightest inconvenience on having to defend the subpoena against the NAF such riches.
See, what is your order? Number one, I have put this here on information. You can't be just saying suspicion. We're only allowed information as
well. And you have also position, but you're saying that these particular state judges are rejected. On their individuals, because they can't so make their case to a judge.
We're friends for the same reason that FCC is friends and
I'm not going to talk to you here. I'm not going to talk to you here.
Because I think the party at least is still information posing the confidence before the court sits there where we're allowed to receive that information and have nothing to do with the selection of that information.
You're not saying you did anything wrong. You're saying you may win the case.
No,
but you're not confidential. All that the judge said was when you subpoenaed the information, but these things that they may show up in court and object to the subpoena, if I may or not. Tell me how the Attorney General of Arizona is in any way prejudiced by having a judge decide whether or not the information should be
prejudiced because at any point there are scarce resources of the name on the third party and their friends who cared in the first place. And the Supreme Court unanimous and squarely held the right that even if they have suffering from just these certain legitimate corrections prior to this. This comes in touch on the protective orders that Your Honor brought up. Even if the protective orders somehow is retroactively sealed, Mr. Jordan wasn't exposed to the same thing that wasn't discovered, it would have been disinterred proceedings proofless.
They stipulated that.
They stipulated that.
So what was your standing judgment?
I'm not objecting to the protective orders.
What questions are on your minds? The protective order is what requires the duty to tell the judge. Tell me, tell any of the use of data materials.
What's the problem?
Agency, it would, you don't have everyone, it's a police report, but not everyone can be able to believe in it. criminal case. And the defendant may be holding in civil discovery that the defendant does not get. It needs to have justice of witnesses that are classified during some in the court. So, I understand his argument. He's a couple. And now, you shouldn't have to notify someone of what they think is going to be an investigation. But has the court improperly said to all third parties, even if you think a crime has been committed, you can't go tell the police. You can't turn over what you have to the police.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. Is there anything in this order that says that the third parties may not respond to subpoenas?
No, I'm not talking about talking to the police chief as well.
The district court has limited the ability to see if he is using law enforcement only in response to specifically issued subpoenas. And if these do stand, law enforcement will do need to stand in a different position in general people who aren't law enforcement, especially here where it's all the receiving of the trade association and regulated industry that impacts public health.
So, for a second, the district court's judgment is on the first part. Because these people engaged in the conduct in the district court's going to use discretion to determine if there's a disclosing information. What you're saying is we already all have to do is get in cahoots with some friendly attorneys to recall who they can disclose everything to and the attorneys to put on the public
record. Your Honor, there's no
evidence in the record. It's in the record. And it's your position that all this information is disclosed to you and will remain confidential.
Your Honor, it's for this confidential. Our sentence does well for these subpoenas.
No, that's not my question. I'm sorry. My question is, once these folks hand over these things to you, the attorneys will know that's correct. Representing to us today, that those good information will be maintained under confidentiality and not disclosed to the public.
I can't remember that because there are all of these things called the interest of justice.
So, does the district court have a quandary here? It's not so close. I get it. The court may not be right. It's not right that you have any problem at all. But the lawyer is correct. The district court says, you've got to start to make this information public. And we have an entire group. We have some attorneys who know who are supporting these third parties to make the information public. And even if the other side know that it's going to occur, just hand it over to them. Don't make it public. And my lawyer will officiate. It's not an abuse of discretion to just say to the other side, give us the notice that you have your own.
Yes, Your Honor. It's overriding to the end of the definition of abuse of discretion. Here is an absurd harm from social law enforcement. Law enforcement is not the same as Congress. We're covered by separate constitutional statutory ethical duties. And law enforcement simply cannot do this job if we're not able to be trusted with information that is independently incompetent on form of
the so it's not national reports. We don't need those. They put their names on the records.
Aware of are there any other cases in there where district courts individual to determine whether there was a crime or not, and we did not appeal it further.
No, Your Honor, the district court itself recognized that one of these rules increased scrutiny for a law enforcement worker on a crime occurred. It simply felt that the limitation being put on more criminal acts of receiving information, that is exactly contrary.
What's the status of your case?
Has the case been extended to 40-year-old abuse of the same court thing in the case of
you? Okay, so let's assume for a moment that we interview our 56 to go to the state judge, and he's there to enforce these subpoenas. And he either shows up or doesn't. And the judge decides whether or not the subpoena ought to be enforced, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and so with respect to this case, one of the things that I was supposed to see back is that a future case. I'm trying to figure out how you're prejudiced about having to go to the state judge and have that judge make a decision.
Well, for one, it's the information belonging to the accuser specifically responsible for the subpoena.
Well, this is what the subpoena is for, but
you're kind of open to the accusation.
Okay, I think the answer is right at this point. What it takes me to destroy the claim, but say, is there anything that they wanted to preserve in the case?
Or I'm saying the destruction of this case is in their presence.
Because if you're looking for change, and they're hoping on trying to get you ready to step
forward on the FCC report, and you step that there is no way to turn this
right. So that's what I'm asking is a different question than I'm asking. In this case, given where we are proceeding, right, was there subpoena when the individual that was taking some information and they're holding on to it, a state judge is ready to warn that's the deal that you need to try to enforce it. And I don't know that any supposition will be in that case. And I'm going to check this by the census of saying, don't you have a state to prove
it is selling from the information we received or the
service to come from this information you see about subpoena. The state has for information that will be considered to them produce the information that you think we just want by the way they're doing it. Unless the jury says they can't.
Well, that's what comes from the prejudice difference. If someone can go to you, if you're not protected, and go to the police with what they have, then you can go to what you have and you can then control your investigation. You have to do it by the subpoena and identify them. I saw in a brief that you are essentially identifying targets of investigations, and this is a different posture than if you look at it before and decide where you want to go as opposed to a special one. You can play offense here, but you have to put defense
right into the cover. If you have any other comments, if you're interested.
For investigation, if you found on this investigation, will be
some of us did not completely review the information. I'm not sure that you have because it's under seal. But my question is, has anybody given you any indication that law enforcement did not receive?
I don't have any reason to share with the court. We are also empowered to conduct a civil investigation or this sort of fraud.
Or at any sort of law
violations. I'm not hearing an answer. Just saying you're not denying, or you're not saying either what you're saying, I'm not going to tell you, and you don't correct that.
It's always your respect for me, Mr. Honor, but
I mean, it's going to be so much better. I mean, even though people are supposed to answer all of our questions, there could be instances where they get really difficult to answer.
Thousands of them are agencies in these reportings we have, and the concerns are we believe that that's sufficient.
I understand your argument to be different in the sense that you're saying that a judge has a Thank you. are, this is only one way that the defendants can be accused of having a charge. I think it would be disreasonable to try to close the session because this particular exhibit is so
people that have threatened and
they need to be performing, they need to get to, and also performing courses in all of the positions they're coming out of. So that goes to irreparable harm to any athlete. And your argument of irreparable harm was either restraint or wellness or release. What was your irreparable harm argument?
Let's take another second to sign the confidentiality agreement.
and that is following the first three things that I've said. And as people know, I've got to stress this because I think I've heard things that are either criminal or I've heard things that should be out there that people should know about. Is that person in a different position than your client? Because the district court clearly did not believe that your client used subterfuge and, you know, reuse a plan and whatever to get in there. Is that putting relevance in analyzing the third person, or would the analysis be the same if the district court had been here holding the material there? I mean, there's a course of attorney that I'm not at this stage to proceed forward in the community about a prior restraint. It might potentially a later proceed for damages. But not at this stage where the question is, will this material of a principal interest be suppressed or allowed? So at this stage, she's not looking there as well. I do also ask the question, do you guys know what people might guess your answer is? If I had more of a words in your mouth, but I understand your answer to me that the district court is wrong to hold that against your client in the analysis. I mean, the court is right. I also believe it's the same though. How much fraud was used to obtain this information was supposed to be used. Absolutely,
so I'm sure you have a subterfuge
here. The current scene is used by Mr. Campbell's
secretary. I'm sorry, but you're not on your knees. The question is, the subterfuge is irrelevant to the case. And your position is it's confidentiality or it's
relevant. And it is irrelevant at this stage of proceedings in terms of suppressing speech because no federal court.
So, as I heard answer your judiciary question, I take it, and I'm phrasing it wrong earlier, is that it really doesn't matter what the judge found about your client's intentions or conduct, and it really doesn't matter that you signed a confidentiality agreement, as long as the information that you obtain is found in a public interest, and you're exactly in the same position as somebody who didn't engage in any conduct or sign a confidentiality agreement. What about this is the stage of the stage
of the court? And the jury, if they make a bit of a change, just from it, I'm not saying that they will make a change, but that would be one of the changes that I'm saying.
But you're saying that the court has to be for 100%. You can't keep being guilty of the same stages.
Yes, Your Honor, because it is present to what was the Supreme Court said in CBS versus Davis.
But it is not matters, is it? Now, I guess I can agree with you on this, but if you're not back with the district, your case with the district court is that not only are the defendants engaged in a public justice sufficient of the evidence, but at least one of the major contractors and signed a confidentiality agreement with a stipulation that they don't have to release the trust back. The Supreme Court didn't have those facts in mind in that case.
Well, since that's better.
Well, the Supreme Court, in discussing a different set of facts, there's language that you put out, but I'm asking whether or not that would have done the facts from this report. It's
interesting. If we're going to keep important CBS versus Davis, they didn't know how to speak as doctors of the matter, and they said they didn't use accusations that they didn't enter some sort of subterfuge or underhanded behavior. And the court said, you know, that would be the subject of the district's proceeding either on right now or information that's great to us in the public.
Rights to disclose information is being given the same.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Any questions?
Okay. You have a question, Mr. Ryan?
Thank you.
Do you have
any other questions? Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Mark Sheridan, and I represent the FDA National Forest Foundation. Preliminary instruction should be affirmed. The injunction simply enforces the contracts that the defendants bring into it. This is not a person that needs. The district court found the defendant contracted away personal rights. And that finding is a challenge in this case. As the district court held, the defendant's waiver is enforceable. Not only is there no public policy for the record that contracts are enforceable in these circumstances, the district court held the public policy interest was strongly in favor of enforcing such disagreements.
Okay, Your Honor. Let's assume that when they went there, somebody said, let's call, and what we do with our clinics is we murder women, and we murder them, and they disclose
them.
Thank you. their signature with the attorney general, they're supposed to hand over to every bit of information they have. I don't have any doubt that they have desired internal information, of course. So, they didn't even have one of the jurors to see the statements to me. The real question in my mind is, if there's not this good reality here, then has the district court been finding them? But it's important to get the more evidence of credibility. And I'm not sure how, the fact that he didn't run my way through stories, is probably the first way to say, it was a difference. Well, it's been admitted. There were a lot of developments between the time of the business and the decision now, and it's relevant to this particular circumstance. Multiple states are precedent. Multiple states are aware of the instances of this evidence. The only state that I've heard of to hear is Arizona, Louisiana. Arizona has been being provided to Arizona for the purpose of all of the materials that pertain to Arizona itself. Arizona continues to offer us the 504,000 views, but that won't be decided unless, as you said, tutorials will be decided by the different court at different times in the course of the recipient.
But what authority do you have in a separate and
that but I'm still going to enforce this contract. We'd be afraid if we were to see you again.
And this really is a process that we cover in groups. Would you say that you're a patient and you should affirm the district court's findings that there's no evidence, but we're not that it's not critical to our decision here in the district court to say there's evidence here for abuse?
Or I'm asking to be here, so I'm never going to see you again. But do you think it's certain to contact the district court where we have not been reported? We need a very different situation going on.
I don't know that the federal staff insists that you're arguing that it doesn't matter what the court found to be abusive. But it's important to say that the potential to flip the active and turning over evidence under all the state
regulations. I understand your question, Judge Paul. I understand this to be an issue that I guess you heard explained. That would be a question of what has to be used. What would be able to go and into the city attorney general, presumably with an underway sense, where they won't promise to be here in the first sense. The question is, if the first evidence is applied, why aren't they entitled to it? If the neighbors understand this, that's all that's being here. Your point is that it's not a state of process for us to judge the judge. Those evidences, the scheme of fraud, is an issue of preparation. That's a separate issue. I'm asking today if they will have the evidence or not. And it will sit in the moment of the evidence of crime. Can the court say to them, before you turn over evidence of crime to law enforcement, you must require that law enforcement to be in front of them? That's the question, Judge Brown. It's interesting. I think that maybe she has to do that.
I think it concerns because defendants did not report to law enforcement.
Ms. Sharp woke up here and she's saying that you both were reporting to law enforcement tomorrow. That goes to you, and we're going to show this story here on the tapes. It's a music channel, so it's just taking it to the people. So that's the same problem that you want. It's the end of this case to report you to report crimes to law enforcement. We have your finding by the district judge that we're going to do it, but it's clearly on the air. If it's law, if it's random, if it's
so I'm not going to resist the question. That's fine. There are four evidence that are not being turned over potentially. So,
what I'm resisting in your argument is the notion that it doesn't matter if something that you're assuming the district, what the information is, and how anyone in the review in the district or reviews it, whether or not it's really information of the crime or simply information that has been sold as a great public interest that may or may not show a crime.
So what it does not allow them to do would be to turn over all 500 or 400 the past which were in place, have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they even publish. It's a crime, it's anything but it's content. It's not allowed them to turn all 500 or 400 servers to law enforcement or to or put it on the internet, which is really what they're supposed to do. It's just crime service. This law enforcement exception does not obviate the obligation of the two arguments for all purposes.
But that might be obviated in these circumstances where there was evidence of crime.
If there were evidence of crime, they could turn it over to law enforcement, but only the part of the material that is actually pertinent to the crime. Not all 5 or 4 hours that they come to that part of the internet, and what they can't decide.
If there is evidence of a crime, they can turn it over to law enforcement. I mean, on both sides, if there is evidence of a crime,
it's important that there's not a support for the fact that all of the evidence here in context, the defendants want to take sentence of it. So, now, in this posture,
in order to decide whether there's evidence of a crime that can be turned over to law enforcement, that this is supposed to be law. And the reason that this is supposed to be law is that the question is essentially whether to enforce the Convention on whether to first enforce their waiver of First Amendment rights, which the district courts do not.
We did not agree with you. I'm just saying this hypothetically. We did not agree with you that they waived their First Amendment rights.
Your Honor, they don't challenge that. That's unchallenged. The district court found that. They found that they challenged it, and that's why, Your Honor, that's why the district court found that their waiver is not enforceable. Three people in Colorado, as this court found, were murdered and partially as a result of the failures that were listed here. The deepness, the explanation at which the murders took place, was the ex-wife, one of the individuals who was featured on the videos that were listed here. And that doctor's name and his birth address was posted on the victim's website. The hashtag associated with the case was hashtag the Planned Parenthood sales gate was MWD. The person who murdered those three people said it repeated no more baby breasts. And the causal link is very clear, but in addition to that, we would have been in any harm from a system without having to implement social security measures and the harm is people from our organization have said that they cannot secure, that they do not have any sort of safety and security in these meetings, they will not continue to attend. And the problem is that creates not only a problem for our own members and their own safety, but also creates a problem for abortion institution. Whereas abortion is an extremely safe medical procedure, part of the reason it is so safe is because doctors are able to come together at these inevitable meetings, continuing medical education, discuss with themselves the latest advances and what's going on with the medicine, and to have those frank conversations that they wouldn't be able to have with members of the public. And that protects the safety before they have to have different abortions. As long as they're talking about legal abortions, but all the evidence, for example, all the evidence here is that there's no evidence for that. But modern people, it is critical to NAPS, to NAPS business, that members of the public who are opposed to admission cannot come in and enforce it and expose the members of NAPS, members and abortion providers who are spoken upon, and violate the privacy and associational rights. We have a First Amendment right to exclude members of the public. And that's exactly why the contracts were put into place here, is to give effect to that First Amendment right. And so,
in a law enforcement work,
as I said, first of all, they waive the person who requires it, requires that it's a person who has doctored. So, the prior restraining was really not that easy because they waive the person who requires it. But second of all, actually, cases that they submitted, pages 2 and 3 of the Marathon Brief, are cases in which courts were attempting to finish the hearing. And actually, the courts have been challenging it. The March 2nd case that they're relying on is a case in which the Fourth Circuit enforced the confidentiality agreement extended to a broader pressure on the court. And instead of the court said that because they agreed beforehand, they would not, that they would not stop this information, they could not submit the CIA had to submit the manuscripts to the CIA, get the CIA to approve or not approve, then there's an injunction there, and if they're in the court to enforce that injunction, there are multiple cases like that. Also, the National Trauma Register, the Sixth Circuit, this says they're not using the word for enforced confidentiality agreement.
Well, if you want to respond just to Andrew Jackson's part of it, because that looks like a discussion of this, and they're basically saying, hey, this restricts a person that is being sent across to the committee for quite a time to us, and we're different than anyone else because we don't, we have different things that they are in us, and just like, they don't get police reports just anymore. They don't have to tell people to believe either what they're investigating and all sorts of things. So why do they need to come in? Why do they have to be covered in all of this? Or can you just go into your job better than that no one ever wants to find your cops back by myself? You know, the easy way to deal with that is to be legal and the cops are there to have problems.
First of all, there's some arguments, all of them.
Well, that's the other thing, but it doesn't matter if it's just that they were robbed as to their
Harrison also is an ex-attorney in the U.S. Department
of Justice. He is a member of the FBI. I want to come to you and talk to the Attorney General. It's been a big year because
you can see, well, as this is what we're doing as the Attorney General, the Attorney General disappears and you can see they are not directly charged with the attorney. They're not charged with the attorney. So all of their arguments are what they will be decided by a different court.
But if they think that they're going to suffer costs, we can start from something.
They haven't directly charged with the attorney. So there would be no basis for this court to see the power of the Attorney General. So I understand that the district judge thought that was easy to argue the confusion that the technical arbitration commission will find serves to not be to be able to see the information from CME without even buying any of the credit. That's what the district judge said. It is preliminary order. No, I'm not going to modify the particular order. I'm going to explain this. Well, but this is a process that is the Attorney General not directly moved to modify the particular order or the CRL or
in the future. There's a process of seizure of the card. But as soon as we think that Mr. Marston is down, the issue is that he is down on his credit. He taught us we can tell the district court to modify the Attorney General.
Your Honor, I think that is not before this court.
So the answer is no. I mean, that's what you think that even if you think you already we did, this court is fixed.
That's what I'm
saying. We did say that this is before you should be considered in and then rule on the
ground. It was made to appear that this court did not.
That's the first intervention in this two court. Did you get out
of the way?
Okay. Let me hand you down. Okay. I think I'll give you two rules.
We're taking the lessons over as well, so I always have questions that you could discard if you're ready. Thank you. Your defendants cannot waive the false representative. No one can waive the false
representative. But that can't be a failure to speak in their office. So your position is that the Attorney General doesn't apply when the public wants to know if they were told to do it.
Yes, that does mean that federal courts will not enforce.
So what happens if you have to represent the public's right to know as opposed to your client's need to speak? If this were to enable a member of the public to get this information, you're claiming that you're releasing your contractual obligations because the public wants to know if you have correct.
Correct.
But I'm not standing to raise the federal courts up to know as opposed to just worrying about your contractual obligations.
Because that's what prior restraint doctrine is all about. It's about the public's right to know. It comes up in every case involving prior restraint or court attempts to restrict. It came up in Crosby versus Brunson. It came up in this versus Marshall. It came up in
those cases. You're right. Why are confidential agreements? No confidential agreement is possible for the public to know about.
I think much information. You might have close cases. I think there could be close cases. This is not one of them. As far as I'm concerned, case of telemeters of its website.
Website was written by the Attorney General. So let the public know they might be interested in this case. It doesn't involve the level of termination that the information that you want to disclose. They have been in touch with your confidentiality agreements of public interest.
I don't think it's a matter that's basically subject to dispute that the information of abortion providers, you don't think that social disputes are public interest disputes because of the public interest.
interested in whether or not the presidential candidate is going to do some affairs. Am I entitled to be entitled to get confidential information? Even that promise is not true. So this promise is not exclusive. So you say that am I entitled to force them to disclose that information?
Nobody's forcing them to hold a meeting. They decided to have a meeting at Folks Hall.
Information
of others. Because it's considered to be a property right.
Thank you.